All right, we're going to get through this snappy.
Not if you keep snapping your fingers, or not.
The CMU Podcast, in association with 7 Digital.
This week, Spotify, Bandpage, in-car listening and Morrissey. Yeah, it's the CMU Podcast. It's the last week in the music business. We're going to talk about it.
You're tempting in a very informal introduction.
Yeah, well, you know, you've got to try different things out, haven't you?
this week.
That person I haven't introduced yet, I'm not going to introduce now. Hello. I'm Andy Malt.
I crashed you, I'm sorry.
I am Andy Malt, the presenter of this podcast. My guest this week.
I crashed your intro and now you've said your name 3 times and you sound like you're a little bit of an egotist.
I'm downgrading you to a guest.
I'm a guest this week. Good.
My guest this week.
Do I get privileges as a guest?
No.
Surely as a guest.
You get to look at those crisps.
Surely as a guest I should get some sort of refreshments. Not the refreshments I brought with me.
You can have my mango tea.
I don't want your mango tea. Mango tea.
Have that water.
It's a made-up drink, isn't it?
Well, all drinks are made up.
When you do the Today programme on the BBC,
yes,
and you're a guest, you get cold toast. So where's my cold toast? With little sort of hotel things of jam to put on your cold toast.
I'll remember it for next week. Unfortunately, you might not be the guest next week.
So. You haven't decided who to book yet.
Yeah, you were a last-minute contingency.
I would say, I'm Chris Cook, by the way, because did you intro me? I don't think you
I'm not
did.
Sure I did. I don't think it's important.
I think this is possibly the least prepared podcast we've ever done.
And
I'm including I'm including the 87 editions we did prior to this incarnation of the podcast in that statement.
I'm not convinced by that.
So it's, we're recording this a day early. It's my fault this time. Usually that's Andy Malt's fault when we're recording early because he's off on holiday somewhere. But I'm going to Belfast for CMU Insights at Output. Output being a music business conference that's happening in Belfast, or happened when you hear this podcast.
Yes, so if you're going to Output, that will be next year because it's already happened.
Yes, and I don't know what I'm doing there next year, if anything. It will sort of depend how tomorrow goes. If tomorrow goes really badly.
Or yesterday. Or 2 days ago, if you listened to on Saturday.
Then I may never be invited back again. So it means we're recording on Wednesday. I'm having a very manic day because as well as CMU Insights at Output that is happening tomorrow / yesterday.
Yeah.
And CMU DIY, you know when... when people, it's become quite fashionable recently when two people are collaborating to put a cross between their names. Yeah. Whereas perhaps in the 90s it would have been something versus something.
Yeah.
Now you put something cross something.
Multiplied by.
How do you say it when you're sort of referring to it in speech? Because that's. because our CMU DIY events are now all CMU DIY cross. Urban Development, Roundhouse, Great Escape, because that's what cool people do, and CMU DIY is it's the cool side of the opera.
These things aren't supposed to be said out loud.
But I don't know how you say it. Anyway, it's the CMU DIY Urban Development Seminar at the Red Bull Studios this evening / 2 days ago. And on top of that, we're making our first announcement of CMU Insights at the Great Escape. That's at. I know how to say that. It's a nice at symbol. CMU Insights at the Great Escape. The first announcement of people who are speaking. We revealed the 4 themes that we're exploring this year with our conference that sits at the heart of the Great Escape Festival in Brighton in May. We announced the topics last year, so obviously Andy Malt can remember what those 4 themes are because we've written about them several times in the CMU Daily, so he'll remind listeners now what the 4 themes are at CMU Insights at the Great Escape 2016.
Buzzwords, i.e. transparency, data and the blockchain.
That's one. Well done.
YouTube.
YouTube and video is another theme. Yes, correct. Theme number 3.
CDs and merch.
Yeah, CDs and merch is something we're going to be looking at the Great Escape this year. And finally...
People.
People. Looking at diversity and training and the health of people who work in the music industry. So those are the strands that CMU will be presenting as part of the Great Escape Convention this year. And what we are announcing tomorrow / yesterday... is some of the speakers who will be taking part. So I'm still finalising all of that and getting people's absolute confirmation and their photo. Not that we do things last minute. But I am still just finalising a couple of things I've sort of pulled in relatively last minute to that. So I don't actually know completely what we're going to be announcing tomorrow morning / yesterday. I do know that Benji from Pledge, the founder of Pledge Music, who has been very vocal on the blockchain.
Yes.
In the last couple of months. He wrote a piece, I think it went on the Medium site, didn't it? He wrote a piece about...
Yeah, he put it on his blog, yes.
Oh, is it his blog? Yeah. Well, there are sort of things on Medium which are kind of like magazines. And I wondered if it was on somebody else's channel.
No, I think it was just his.
Okay. Anyway, he blogged about the blockchain late last year. And since then, he has sort of become the go-to guy for debate and discussion around copyright data and how the blockchain technology may or may not have a role in solving the music industry's data problem. He's the go-to guy, so I went to him. And so he is going to be presenting his vision and his idea at The Great Escape. And then we'll have people like Sammy Andrews and Andy Edwards, who also have a perspective on this. I will be trying to do a beginner's guide to the blockchain. So if you...
Because I think that... Part of the reason Benji's had such a response to that blog post was that everyone went, oh my God, someone understands it.
So I am going to give you the real beginner's guide. So don't worry. Don't think this will be, because there have been a number of sessions on the blockchain of late because it's a big talking point and data and transparency and all of that. And I have a feeling that quite a lot of people sit in the room and think, this all sounds brilliant, but I don't really know what they're talking about.
Yes.
So we will do a beginner's guide before we get Benji on stage to describe his vision, and then Sammy and Andy will join in the debate. There are all sorts of reasons why the vision that Benji has might not work. They are political power reasons within the music industry. So we're going to identify what those are and debate how we might overcome them. So that's one of the things that will be happening during CMU Insights at The Great Escape this coming May. Go to the website, cmuinsights.com, click on The Great Escape picture on the homepage, and you'll find out what else it was that we announced yesterday that most of the other things have already been confirmed. But we need to get on with this podcast.
We've already used up quite a lot more than our allotted intro time. So
cmuinsights.com, click on The Great Escape photo, and you'll find all the things that we have so far announced about our conference. See you in Brighton in May. Let's talk about something that happened this week in music.
Okay, first story. Well, my guest this week is noted puff piece writer Chris Cook, who is an expert on why Spotify is great.
Yeah, I've been accused of of being too positive about Spotify. I think what it was, 18 months ago, when everyone was like, oh, Spotify, my instinct was then to go, oh, hang on a second, there are all sorts of problems with this business model. Don't get carried away. And now lots of people are down on Spotify. Sort of my instinct has sort of gone the other way to saying, well, hang on a second. I'm not saying they have the right business model, and I'm not saying that they are the future, but half of the things that you're criticizing them of aren't really fair is my current position.
What else are you going to do? Anyway.
What else am I going to do? What else is the industry going to do there?
Yes. I think the thing that you were accused of being a puff piece did point out a lot of flaws in Spotify's and the music industry's future. So it wasn't very puffy.
It did have some very big quotes from Daniel Ek. Perhaps they didn't get past the Daniel Ek quotes. My critique followed Daniel Ek's quotes, but they were interesting quotes. So that's why I let him run with some big, chunky, bigging up Spotify things, because he did an interview on that website, which I've forgotten the name of.
Quora.
That's it. That website, which I didn't quite know was still going.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a bit like a Reddit Ask Me Anything, but in a slightly more formalised way. I don't know if you could ask him anything. But he was responding to the public's questions. And one of the questions he was asked was, what do you say to all the artists that hate you? I think it's worth noting, oh, it's going to become a Spotify puff piece now here on the podcast. But I mean, there is, so I get this quite a lot when I talk to journalists who aren't sort of music business specialist journalists, they're business journalists or whatever. And they'll say, why do all the artists hate Spotify? And it's like, some artists hate Spotify and some artists are unconvinced about Spotify. A lot of artists love Spotify, so it's wrong to say all the artists hate it. But there have been some high-profile critics, and he was basically responding to that, saying
that he recognised that Spotify had a responsibility to educate people on the positives of streaming, but said, if you look at the figures, the music industry has gone back into growth, or the record industry has gone back into growth, and that is down to streaming. So, is basically what he said. But as you pointed out...
Good summary
as
there.
You pointed out in your puff piece, if that's the case, if the record industry is now increasingly reliant on streaming, then that's problematic, because streaming is by no means assured as a business model in its current state. It's currently pretty much entirely running off VC money, and that's a problem.
Yeah, and that, I suppose that is why I am now very much of the more vocal opinion that everyone needs services like Spotify and Apple Music. And those are the two that have gained the most traction. YouTube subscription might fill a gap. Amazon Prime might fill a gap. But at the moment, when it comes to sort of subscription streaming, we are talking worldwide about Spotify and Apple Music. And he is right that the record industry saw a phenomenal decline in annual revenues between 2000 and 2010. Since then, the industry has been more or less flat. It went up 0.2%.
Yeah, he was kind of saying like, oh, it's storming ahead now. Everyone's got loads of money now because of us, which that's not the case.
But in terms of revenue, it does look like the record industry is slowly turning a corner, and having had all of that decline and then sort of being a little bit flat for a few years, maybe is now seeing a slight increase. Plus, of course, it's worth remembering that the figures that we always talk about are revenue, and digital is generally more profitable than physical. So the profit margins are increasing. So although even if revenues are flat, you would assume that the profit margins are increasing. So the record industry is becoming slightly more profitable again. And with CD sales continuing to decline, download sales plummeting in the last couple of years, all of that is down to streaming money. But as you say, what that means is that the record industry is ever more reliant, and this will only increase as the years go by, ever more reliant on the loss-making streaming sector, because nobody who runs a streaming service is making a profit yet. And that's not sustainable. At some point, these companies have got to make profits. I mean, OK, an Apple could conceivably run its streaming service at a loss for the long term, although I don't think they want to.
No.
Apple don't like losing money on content. That's not what they do. And Spotify certainly at some point has to go into profit. And you know, whatever you think about Spotify's business model, I'm not saying it's the right business model. Whatever you think about Spotify in terms of the people and the size of the company and the things that they are doing and their freemium to premium model and all of that, if Spotify was to go, it would be a disaster. And so I think everybody really has an interest in enabling that company to succeed and by all means lobby it to try and morph the business model into something that is perhaps more artist friendly, more record industry friendly or whatever. But the record industry's fortunes at the moment are very much tied to the fortunes of companies like Spotify and maybe Pandora. I've not mentioned Pandora. Pandora's also important in this. So we need those companies to succeed, even if we hate those companies. I mean, back in the 90s, everyone hated HMV. People love HMV now. They forget in the 90s. We all hated HMV. We all hated the Virgin Megastore. The bloody high street record stores are in cahoots with the majors and they don't champion. They phased out vinyl before it was due. Bloody retailers. But we needed the retailers, otherwise we couldn't sell any records. So we need them. So yeah, this really has turned into a Spotify puff piece, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, do you want to talk about the other Spotify thing that happened, which is the latest development in the mechanical royalties lawsuit, which we've talked about before?
Yes, so
David Lowry's mechanical copyright lawsuit.
Just before Christmas, David Lowry, a vocal critic of streaming services like Spotify, sued Spotify, claiming, in my opinion, hey, here, I'm going to say something against Spotify. It is my opinion that his interpretation of the law is correct. I think he has a decent case in this lawsuit in that he is saying that when it comes to mechanical royalties in the US, Spotify is relying on a compulsory license that covers mechanicals in America, but they haven't complied with the terms of the compulsory license because the compulsory license says if you are going to use this license, which means that songwriters and publishers have to allow you to use their songs and you pay them a set rate that's set by statute. So you don't need to go and get specific permission. You don't have to negotiate rates. It's all set in the compulsory license by the law. However, in order to do that, you have to send the owner of the copyright a notice of intent that you're going to use their music and then start paying them the royalties. For a bunch, we don't quite know how many, but it's probably a lot of songwriters, Spotify haven't done that. They say because there's no central database of copyright ownership, which there isn't. Record companies don't tell streaming services what songs they're using in the recordings they supply. So even if you know the name of a recording, you don't necessarily know exactly what song it is that's in there to find the copyright owner. So they're blaming it on data, and they have a point. But also, Larry has a point, and his lawyers have a point, which is the compulsory license says that you need to issue this notice of intent, and if you don't know who to issue it to, you issue it to the US Copyright Office, you pay the US Copyright Office the royalties, and then you make it their problem to try and find out who the money should go to. Spotify didn't do that. Nobody does that. But that is what the compulsory license says. And so that is the gist of the lawsuit. And this week, or actually late last week, Spotify filed its first response to that lawsuit. And in the main, what the initial legal filing in response to Larry's lawsuit is that Larry wants this to be a class action, which would mean that any other songwriter whose songs are being streamed on Spotify, who haven't had their royalties under the compulsory license, haven't had notices of intent under the compulsory license, if David Larry won, they would also be able to pursue damages, statutory damages for copyright infringement through this case. And Spotify really want this case to not be a class action. If they have to fight David Larry in court, so be it, but they don't want a class action because that would set a really dangerous precedent. And so they picked all sorts of holes into the argument that David Larry's lawyers have put forward as to why this should qualify as a class action. And so they want the judge to say, no, no class action, and then they can deal with the David Larry complaints, but only around his songs rather than all songs.
Yes, because that could be hundreds or even thousands of songwriters who would potentially get a payout. We should say they're due a payout anyway. Spotify has the money, but the problem is that because this is a copyright infringement lawsuit and David Larry is seeking damages, then it can be up to $155,000.
$150,000 per track.
Yes.
Per infringement.
So it's not just, you got to give us the money you owe us. So that's what Spotify would like to do. But it could end up being very costly if Spotify were to lose.
Yes. If it turned out there were thousands of songs and thousands of songwriters came forward who said, I'm part of the class, therefore I should benefit from this lawsuit if David Larry wins. $150,000 is the upper. The judge doesn't have to award that much. You can award a lot less than that. But if he did award $150,000 per song, and there were thousands of songs, there's some maths there. It's a lot of money. So, yes, that's the development. I think it'll be really interesting to watch how those cases develop. There's a second class action from another songwriter on exactly the same issue. So it will be interesting to see how those cases develop over the next few months. Here ends the CMU podcast, Spotify Puff Piece of the Week.
YouTube has bought Bandpage. So there's a thing that happened.
Indeed.
Yeah, it did. Bandpage being a service that allows you to, as an artist, push out updates to various different services all at once, rather than having to log into each one individually and update things.
It began, didn't it, as a Facebook service in essence. So remember when artists put an effort into their Facebook pages, whenever that was. When was
vaguely
that? 2012 or something. And Bandpage enabled you to do more with your Facebook page than Facebook would normally allow. And you could add extra tabs. Do you remember when you had tabs on your Facebook page and you could put your gig listings and do ticket sales and MP3 downloads and stuff like that. And then when Facebook changed and artists started to move away from having Facebook as a core channel where they sort of, beyond putting some plugs and some photos and some videos, it ceased to be as important in the marketing mix for artists. So Bandpage basically extended what they were doing and saying, okay, well, we will be the intersection between an artist and all these different digital channels. And where they became most important in the last couple of years is upsell, is allowing artists to, on their profiles, on streaming services in particular, to have a button where they could use their presence on a Spotify or whatever services they were on. They were on audio.
SoundCloud, YouTube.
Rest in peace. To give artists the opportunity to use their profiles on these streaming services to upsell T-shirts and tickets and stuff like that. So that is sort of what Bandpage have become known for. There's that diagram that's been doing the rounds a lot since this story came about where you have the band and then it has lots of lines to all the different services. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
I'm going by that picture alone. But there's a lot of little logos in that picture. Having said that, whenever you see these days pictures that have lots of logos of digital services, and you think, oh, that's impressive, they're working with all those digital services, you then have to give it a quick scan because they're all closing down. Mixed Radio went this week. They're all closing down so quickly. You have to go through that and cross off all the ones which no longer exist. But that is what Bandpage did. But now they're part of YouTube.
Yes, well, that's what Bandpage still does. And in their statement about the acquisition, they were very keen to say, no, it's all business as usual. Everything will carry on as it was. Don't you worry about us.
Presumably cut and paste the statement that every data or middleman service puts out when they get bought by one of the big guys.
Yeah, shortly before they're shut down.
And made, an in-house division. So we know this because, as you say, Bandpage wrote about it on their blog late last week. So that is how we know this announcement. And they were very much saying, business as usual, we'll still service all of these other sites and all of these other services. So if you're a user of our service, you'll still be able to upsell and control your presence on all of these other channels. But that will be the interesting thing. When companies of this kind get bought by one service, then usually one of two things happens, and often both happen, which is either the service who's bought it say, why would we let our competitors use this service we've just bought? Or the other streaming services that are using the service go, why would we want to use a service that is now owned by one of our competitors and therefore any profit they make is helping one of our competitors? So Spotify is the interesting one, isn't it? This is becoming a very Spotify-themed podcast. Because Spotify added upsell to their platform a few years ago now, because various, particularly art managers and artists, were saying, while the royalties are growing on these services, but we're not necessarily earning the royalties we would like, but you've got a great audience, you know who our fans are. If we could just reach those people and sell them T-shirts and merchandise and tickets, then while we're waiting for the royalties to grow, that means we would have another kickback. And Spotify, like most of its competitors, said, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. And in the main introduced, well, in my opinion, pretty lackluster upsell. It was clearly a thing to placate artists and managers more than it was, yeah, this should be core to our business. Although, so Pandora's move into ticketing is a little bit more proactive, although we're yet to see how that's going to properly integrate. But Spotify added it, and initially they worked with Topspin, didn't they? Topspin had a service that was this middleman where you would have a relationship with Topspin and put your sell-through stuff on there, and then Spotify would pull that information through and present the information through their channel. So everybody had to sign up to Topspin to get their merch onto Spotify. And then Beats Music, as was, bought Topspin. So exactly the same thing happened.
Exactly what you were just describing. Yeah, Spotify went, actually, not quite so keen on Topspin anymore, and cut it off.
And so at that point, Spotify said, doesn't matter, we're working with Bandpage. If you've got a Bandpage account, it'll all carry on regardless. It's all going to be great. And so for the last couple of years, people have been using Bandpage to get onto Spotify. But it may be that history repeats itself now and the other services start to, well, start to what? I mean, is there another startup out there which they can plug into, or do they do it in-house? What is the solution? I mean, it's similar with the various data companies that were out there. So Music Metric and Next Big Sound and those sort of middlemen independent data companies that would represent lots of labels and rights owners on one side and work with lots of DSPs on the other side and help artists and managers and labels manage all the data that was coming in from streaming services and from other online stuff too, social or whatever. But then they build those businesses using all the data from their clients and from the DSPs. But then they both got bought. So Music Metric got bought by Apple. Next Big Sound got bought by Pandora. And then in essence, they become the in-house analytics teams at those services. And then it's like, OK, well, what does everyone use for data now? Is there just going to be every 18 months a data service company launches and a sort of middleman upsell company launches and everyone has to lock into those services and work out how they work and set it all up? And then after 18 months, a Google or an Apple or someone buys them and then they get cut off and then we all have to start again. Is that how it's going to be every 18 months? Or will there be a startup who will make some sort of commitment that we will never sell to a big guy that basically means we can't be an independent service open to everybody?
Well, I think it depends entirely on whether that service is making money or not. I mean, the rumour is that Bandpage was sold for a lot less money than had been invested in it. It wasn't making a profit. So it's not really in a position to say, no, we'll hold out until we're making the big bucks.
And indeed, you know, any startup that is seeking sizable investment from VCs or whoever in order to build a business, even if their ethos is, oh, we should remain independent, we should be here for the good of the artists, the minute you're taking, you know, sizable checks off venture capitalists or other investors, they're going to want to return on their investment at some point. And if the chances of you being super profitable year on year in the foreseeable future, well, if there are very few chances of that, which there probably are, then your initial backers probably see selling to a big player as their exit strategy. So, yeah, it is a challenge.
So the future of Bandpage, not assured, despite their apparent confidence.
As a standalone entity. I mean, what will be interesting to see is, what do YouTube do with that technology? Is this an indication that YouTube, which have dabbled with upsell for a while now, but again, in a particularly, I think, quite a lackluster way, could this be YouTube, who, out of everybody, need to do something to placate the artist community? Could they be putting a much bigger effort into enabling people who have channels on YouTube to upsell tickets and merch and stuff? And will they extend it to the YouTube content creators that are not music? You know, if you are have a YouTuber channel where you're doing whatever it is that you do on YouTube channels, recipes or makeup or chatting about nonsense, all that stuff that you get on YouTube, we know that the stars on there are selling books and T-shirts and merch. Is it YouTube seeing an e-tail? Do we still say e-tail? E-commerce. E sort of fell out of fashion other than email, didn't they?
E-tail was always a terrible term.
You don't approve of e-tail.
No.
A something opportunity to get involved in upselling stuff. You see, this is why you need phrases like e-commerce and e-tail, because they sort of are snappy way of saying
you can say
things.
E-commerce.
Okay, an e-commerce solution. We'll see, I guess. CMU approved time, Andy Moss is going to tell you what music he's been approving this week. In reverse order this week.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. Let's do it in reverse order, the acts that you approved in the CMU Daily. So we'll start off with Tellyman that you approved yesterday.
Yeah, Tellyman are a band from London who write very good guitar pop. They have a new album coming out in April called Brilliant Sanity. There's a couple of tracks from it already out. Dusseldorf just arrived. Fall in Time was already out. Have a listen.
If you had money on Norway being the country where this week's Nordic artist would come from, then get yourself a prize.
I considered not including any Nordic Scandinavian artists.
But then Berger had to be approved.
Yeah, yeah.
Is so, that how we're saying it?
Yeah.
Berger or Berger?
Margaret Berger, who was Norway's 2013 Eurovision entrant.
But didn't win.
But had one of the finest Eurovision songs ever to be put forward, which was written by Karen Park, another former approved artist. Anyway, that's not the song. This is a new song. She's back. She's kind of been off the music scene for a while, but she's back.
She's recovered from
her recovered. She used to be known as Margaret Berger. Now she's just Berger.
Yeah, she's had to come back with a new identity.
She's come back with a single called Apologise, which is the first in a series of self-released singles that are going to come out over the next few months. And it's just, it's very good. It's more pop, electronic pop this time.
So go check it out. Mm. Long-awaited music from Nevermen.
Yeah, yeah. Dose One, Mike Patton and Tunde Adebimpe.
Sort of a supergroup then.
Not a supergroup, not a side project. They're very adamant about that.
Okay.
It's just a thing.
So tell us about this
doing.
Supergroup
and side project.
It's a project
they announced originally, I think, in about 2008. And then 2009, Dose One did an interview with Pitchfork and said, yeah, album's coming out next year probably. 6.5 years later,
here we are
with the album out, and it's so. I think the aim of the project is for each of them to have equal weighting in it, so no one is standing at the front of this band. Three frontmen, they describe it as, which is probably quite a difficult balance to achieve perfectly. They've done a quite good job of it. It does mean that sometimes the influences in the project just wildly veer off to the left somewhere as someone else puts their input into it. But it's good. We approved a track called Mr. Mistake, which a new video for has just come out.
Go check it out. And Georgia, is that how we're saying it?
Yeah.
Not Yorja.
Not Yorja.
Because they're not Nordic. Georgia Smith.
Georgia Smith she's a very exciting up-and-coming singer-songwriter from that London. She's from somewhere in the north.
Bit London-centric theme approved, isn't it?
That's well, she's not originally from London.
Ah, that's all right.
And I don't think Tellyman are either. And the other two have never been to London.
Don't even know it exists.
No. So Georgia Smith, anyway, she has this her first single out called Blue Lights. It samples Dizzy Rascal. It's very good. Listen to it.
At completemusicupdate.com/approved.
Yes. Now, the big news this week is that kids love radio, at least in their cars, possibly.
See, when you say kids love radio, I'm now picturing like you know, I don't know, 6-year-olds listening to the radio. And now you've said they've got cars, so that's confusing, isn't it?
It's some dubious research from a radio player who, for one thing, have a vested interest in this research. Anyway, they did this research that showed that 75% of all in-car listening is conventional radio.
So you might remember last year the BPI and the Entertainment Retail Association put out a bit of research about in-car listening from a CD perspective. And one of the arguments is that one of the reasons why the UK record industry is selling more CDs in 2016 than perhaps we would have expected 5 or 6 years ago is because CDs are still being used by some people in their car. That is still how they get their music, because people have cars for a long time. Lots of people buy second-hand cars, so they don't necessarily have the super-duper new entertainment systems that come with sort of high-end new cars these days. A lot of people don't have cars with USB ports. Some cars do, don't they? But plenty of people don't. So it's, do you still have a cassette player that you can plug something in to make your iPhone into the system? So lots of people still have relatively antiquated entertainment systems in their car, and therefore CDs are still being played. But what this research was saying, and confirming, I guess, I mean, it's no secret that a lot of radio listening has always happened in the car, and this research confirms continues to do so. If you look at the Radar figures, which are the official listening figures for UK radio, which are not again, in themselves are a little bit dubious for various reasons, by the way that the radars are calculated, the way they work out how many people are listening to radio shows.
They just have a guess.
Not quite a guess, but it's not the best research in the world. But if we believe the radars, or even if we just sort of believe the radars, what you're seeing in radio is actually radio listening figures are holding up quite well. The issue for the radio industry is the length of time of listening is in decline and has been for quite a long time. So people are listening to less radio than they used to. They have other options for listening in the evening or at the weekend. But in the kitchen, in the bathroom and in the car, people are still, a lot of people are still listening to radio. And this is what this research was confirming. They spoke to 1,500 people in the UK, Germany and France. And the people they spoke to had all bought a car relatively recently, and one of sort of the big brand cars. So they were keen to stress that they hadn't just spoken to people with really old cars. The only thing they have in their car is an old-fashioned radio. Were people who had other choices in their car.
Yeah, they wanted people who had fancy new entertainment systems that could do other things.
And of course, the internet is coming to the car dashboard. It's taken a bloody bloody long time, and it is sort of high-end cars that have the really good net-connected cars. And even if the cars have a great internet-connected entertainment system in the dashboard, how good is the mobile internet once you get outside of sort of big urban areas in order to feed the net connection into the car? But that is where technology is going. And all the streaming services see that as an opportunity. We know that people listen to a lot of audio and a lot of music in the car. They always have done. In the US, Pandora and Sirius, a lot of their success is because of in-car listening. And the Spotify's and Deezer's and Apple Music's of this world see that as an opportunity. As internet-connected cars become the norm, they're all doing deals, aren't they? Because all the car companies have their own operating systems for their dashboard entertainment systems. And all the streaming services are doing deals so that when you start it up, there's a Spotify blob or a Deezer blob. Having said that, it was Rara who seemed to do the most of those car deals. So it can't be driving that much listening just at the moment. But the streaming services do see that as an opportunity. But what this research was saying, in essence, to the car industry is don't get too carried away with that. Because do you know what people really want to listen to in the car? A good old-fashioned radio station with a DJ and time checks and a bit of travel news. And some adverts, that's what people want to listen to.
Yeah, because they reckon 82% of people would never buy a car that didn't have a radio in it. Imagine that.
So they were pretty impressive stats, as you say, coming from the radio industry. So they do have a vested interest in this research. But I think it's probably true. A lot of people are still listening to conventional radio. The question is, I suppose, is that because people haven't been properly exposed to alternative entertainment systems, audio systems in cars? Because people should really be downloading podcasts, shouldn't they? I mean, that's what people should be doing. If they have
listen to a lot of podcasts in the car.
Any form of internet-connected in-car system, or indeed they're plugging their iPhone into the stereo system in some way, that is what people should be listening to. Well, actually, what people should be listening to is the CMU podcast, really, in their car. I mean, if you commute 40 minutes every day of the week, then you could listen to each edition getting close to 12 or 13 times. And that is ultimately the future.
Yes.
But people are still listening to the radio. The question is it because internet-connected entertainment systems are yet to penetrate? Is it because actually those systems are early days, and even though some companies are doing deals, they're not hugely engaging or interactive or attractive yet? Is it that it's just very early in the growth of sort of internet-connected in-car listening? Or is it that actually people like the press a button and some music plays and there's some chat and I get the travel news and the other news. Is it actually that sort of format for a lot of people, not you, I suspect, and I don't drive, so not me, but for a lot of people, that is just what they want to listen to in the car.
Yeah, probably. I suppose there's a certain ritual to the car, sort of getting in and, putting on the radio. I have to say, I'm not part of that group. The only time I listen to the radio is if the Bluetooth connection in my car is playing up.
And it's the only option.
It's the only option. But I have, my car is 17 years old and I listen to many podcasts and music over Bluetooth or sometimes plugged into a USB port because it's not very expensive to upgrade your stereo system to be able to do that when you get a car that has a tape player in it still when you want something else.
So you're saying that the people who aren't doing podcasts and such stuff in their car just aren't trying hard enough?
But then the proportion of people who are listening to podcasts is really quite small. And so you've got to go proportion of people who are listen to podcasts and have worked out how to do that in their car. Again, it's a small proportion of a small proportion.
I suppose radio does put the most effort into its programmes that go out during morning and evening rush hour. So even though that might not be programming you like, they are putting the most effort into the shows that go out between 7:30 and 9:30.
It's not necessarily that I don't like it. It's that I have other options.
You have other options. Now, you started this by telling us that the kids were listening to radio. So, again, with something like this, if you put your little cynic hat on, you might say, in order to get those stats, you only spoke to old people. It's old people who are listening to the radio. But Radio Player were keen to stress that they had people from all different age ranges in those 1,500 people they spoke to. And actually, there wasn't that much variation. The figures were slightly higher for the older generations than the people in their 20s, but only like 3 or 4%. When it came to, would you buy a car without a radio in it? Only a few percent less in their 20s said, that would be fine, than did in older age ranges.
So they were only interviewing people who'd recently bought new cars. And how many people in their 20s are buying brand new cars? Did they interview an even number of age groups?
I don't know.
I don't know the answer
to that question. You're saying they only spoke to one person in their 20s, and that was someone who works at Heart FM. Is that your conspiracy theory?
That's what I reckon.
Obviously, Radio Player pulls both BBC and commercial radio stations into an app that you can then listen, so they want their app in the in-car entertainment systems. So even as more people are accessing internet-based content in their car, the Radio Player is there and all the radio stations are part of the catalogue of content that is available to the average driver. But good old radio. That's what I say.
Shut it down. That's what I say. Shut it all down. Just time to very, very quickly run through some of the things that we did not have time to talk about this week. Kanye's album is out. Don't have time to talk. Don't even start. We don't have time to talk about all of the things associated to that news.
I'm very bored of Kanye West.
Shush.
That's all I'll say.
It was the Grammys this week. Also, no time to talk about the Grammys.
Ed Sheeran won some. I know that.
Adele's microphone fell onto her piano. We're not talking about it.
You thought the Bowie tribute was quite good. I've seen real mixed reviews of that. Some people thinking that it was deeply offensive and rubbish, and other people saying, if you're going to do a tribute, that's how to do a tribute.
I was undecided, but my punchline worked better if I was very positive about it first.
I see. Was it just an excuse to be able to diss the Brits that haven't happened yet?
Didn't even do that.
Did you not? Well, there you go.
No, I dissed the fact that the Bowie tribute became an advert for a tech company.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Anyway, we're not talking about it. I said we're not talking about it. The Official Charts Company has launched the official trending chart. We talked about the Grammys too long. Now, no time to tell you that Zara Larsson topped that or even talk about what it is.
Pandora, it's a trending chart. That's what it is.
Pandora's not for sale. Unless it is, it probably is, but they're saying it's not. NME has scored its highest ever ABC figure. By printing more copies and has suddenly decided after years of saying, you shouldn't pay attention to ABCs, that the ABCs is the greatest thing to ever happen.
ABC figures, the official circulation figures of magazines and newspapers, being so much more accurate than the listening figures for TV and radio. But the NME were very down on them while their ABC was rubbish. But now their ABC is big! Yeah, they were very keen to tell us about it. Let's just put it like that.
Anyway, you can read all of those stories at the show notes at completemusicupdate.com/podcast.
The NME should put their ABC figure on a T-shirt and then get Morrissey, because he's a mate of the NME. is to get Morrissey to pose wearing that T-shirt, because he's very into posing for the camera wearing T-shirts at the moment, I believe.
Yes, yes.
Well, he was for about 20 minutes.
Morrissey did a bit of modelling. So that's nice for Morrissey, bit of extra income on the side.
Yeah, so brand partnership from Morrissey. Not the most obvious go-to guy for brand partnerships, Morrissey, because he's quite down on, everything.
Yeah. Really. Anyway, so people...
But he clearly liked this brand long enough to actually do the photo shoot.
Yes, so people noticed that adverts for fashion brand Supreme had started popping up with that Morrissey on them. And as you would usually expect in any situation such as this, Morrissey quickly put out a statement saying that he hates that company and everyone should stop looking at the pictures.
And legal action is already being considered.
Yes. He issued a statement saying that he didn't like that photo and he'd retracted his involvement in the campaign because the company Supreme had at some point been involved with a hamburger brand called White Castle. And he said that they'd sent a legal warning saying, you can't use this picture, we've retracted our involvement, and then the company went ahead and published it anyway. So that was Morrissey's side of the story.
And as is often the way in Morrissey stories, we know an awful lot about the contracts that Morrissey signs, because whenever he signs a contract, he then puts out a statement saying, I'm not doing this, they can't make me do it, they're in breach of contract. And so then the other person has to come forward and says, well, actually...
Here are all the terms of the contract.
Here's what we agreed, as far as we are concerned, and this is how Morrissey, in our opinion, breached our deal.
Yes, so Supreme came back with a statement to Stereo Gum and said that Morrissey had demanded a substantial fee for appearing in the advert, which he'd wanted up front before the photo shoot took place.
Well, they said they paid it up front.
They said they paid it up front.
Did they say that was a demand? Perhaps they just like paying people up front.
Maybe they do. Anyway, they paid Morrissey up front for his involvement. Then they did a photo shoot. It lasted about 2 hours. Morrissey went home. He was allowed approval on the photo. They gave him a selection of photos to approve. The only stipulation was that he couldn't unreasonably withhold his approval. So can you guess what Morrissey did?
Well, you're adding an opinion there on whether or not this was reasonable. But Morrissey didn't like any of the photos that came out of the photo shoot.
No, instead sent a picture that he'd taken of himself.
Wearing one of their T-shirts.
Yeah.
So met them halfway.
Met them halfway. But they weren't particularly keen on his selfie.
Because they'd hired quite a known photographer.
Terry Richardson, a controversial photographer.
Yes.
Morrissey kept his clothes on, at least.
Yes.
So there's that. But they said, well, we can't really use this picture you've taken of yourself. But if you really don't like any of these pictures that we've sent you, you can pick any picture at all from the entire photo shoot.
Here's a hard disk full of photos.
Or we'll do the photo shoot again at our expense. Don't worry about it. Or you just give the feedback and we'll forget it all happened. Everyone's happy.
And everyone will learn to never hire Morrissey for a photo shoot ever again. But he didn't seem... they say he didn't respond to that, don't they?
Well, they said he ignored the options and then started saying that because he'd discovered that they'd done something with this hamburger company, that meant the contract was terminated. Which, as far as I know, that was not a clause in the contract. But that's what he is apparently saying. He's saying that he has not got any fee. They're saying he hasn't returned the fee, so where's the fee?
Did he not at one point say, I would return the fee and call it off, but then said he hadn't had the fee or something?
It's all confusing, isn't it, with Morrissey?
So people noticed the photo, he put this blog post out, they then responded, he then responded to the response, basically saying, I never got a fee, you'll hear from my lawyers. Have we had another response to the response to the response?
Though his response to the response was slightly half redundant, because obviously the advert has been published. The Supreme said, we got to a point where what else could we do but just go ahead as per our original agreement. Morrissey put out the statement first saying, I've got no fee, don't know what you're talking about, sorry. That's out of my hands. And then said that by publishing the advert, Supreme has derailed the negotiations. So if the advert's published, I'm not really sure what negotiations there are to be had.
So this is all rumbling on. Obviously, we mentioned right at the start of this podcast, we are recording this edition a day earlier than normal. Normally, we'd do it Thursday afternoon for Friday delivery. This week, we're recording it on Wednesday. So who knows what might have happened in this ongoing saga by the time the podcast comes out. But another entertaining chapter in the... There should just be a book, because he's done both an autobiography and his fiction book, hasn't he? There should just be a book of all of the deals Morrissey did that went wrong. That would be a much more interesting book.
I mean, you might think that Morrissey gets some enjoyment.
I sort of do.
From writing all these statements, but that was the other thing he said this week, was that I write these statements because there is no one else to write them. The joy I receive from such statements is non-existent.
Poor Morrissey.
What statements do you receive no joy from? Tell us at CMU on Twitter. And make sure you subscribe to this podcast to receive it every week for more. Probably just talking about Spotify.
Yeah, more bigging up Spotify and just basically being an offshoot of their PR department.
Yeah.
They should bloody well put this podcast on Spotify. I'm going to get on the phone and ask them about that.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, anyway. This is the end of the podcast.
Yeah, it was presented by me, Andy Malt, with my guest this week, Chris Cook. It was produced by Matt Peaty. Maybe he'll be next week's guest. But for more from CMU, you can go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, the CMU podcast is an unlimited production in association with 7 Digital.
I see you bought crisps again.
I like crisps. All I've eaten today is Garibaldi biscuits.
I just ate some octopus.
Octopus?
Yeah.
Octopus biscuits.
There were no raisins in it.